Hey, this is Carrie Peters.
And Stacey Morgenstern.
And welcome to Better Than Ever, a Health Coach Institute podcast.
Where we're here to question how we do life because the normal rules no longer apply.
Hello, Better Than Ever podcasters. Hannah Duncan here. And today I'm very excited to invite this very special guest of ours, the founder of Dry Farm Wines, Todd White. Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
Awesome and happy to be here. Can't wait to share some wine secrets with your audience.
Ooh, probably going to be my favorite topic ever.
Well, you know, I get paid to drink.
That sounds like the best career ever. Do you need an assistant?
Exactly. It's a lot of fun.
I can totally assist you in drinking wine. Well, Todd has generously donated to our live events a couple times. If you've been to HCI Live, you've probably competed in the social media competition where you can win a case of dry farm wines. And I've tried to win so many times, but for some reason they won't give it to staff. So I'm not sure why, but Todd, thank you so much for supporting our live events. We really appreciate it and love to see and learn a little bit more about your product.
Awesome. Thank you. We should just send you a box of wine if you're having a hard time drinking it.
I'll take it.
I will send it.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, then I will see you guys later. That's all I needed for today. just kidding. So as a company of entrepreneurs that like to grow their dream businesses, we always like to hear a little bit about the background of the folks that we have on the podcast. So Todd, I would love to hear a little bit about you and what you were doing before you became the founder of Dry Farm Wines.
Well, Dry Farm Wines was started in fourth quarter of 2015, so it's a very new company. I have been self-employed since I was 17. I've started, give or take, around 10 companies, depending upon what you consider an actual company, but let's just call it around 10. Two very successful exits, a couple of, you know, pretty good successes, a couple of moderate failures, and one dramatic disaster of a failure, which happened to be my last business. So I came to this business on the heels of a very painful experience, the only real catastrophic failure I've had in my adult life. And so it was pretty painful, but I would say it was the most important thing that could have happened to me. It led me to my awakening and to meditation. And I would attribute the extraordinary growth, the 30,000% growth that this company has experienced since 2015, to meditation. In fact, we begin every day at my office, my staff, including our warehouse and fulfillment staff, all join together for an hour of meditation is how we start our day every day.
So, wow. Every
yes,
day?
It's pretty incredible. And I think everybody here would tell you that it's the single most important thing that we do and has driven amazing, amazing abundance and business success.
That's amazing to have your group come together every single day. You know, at HCI, we're a remote company, so we don't get that togetherness. But when we're at our events, we like to do yoga. We like to hang out and try something like that. But I can only imagine how much we'd grow if we had an hour together like that every day. What led you to wanting your staff to do that?
Well, it was, you know, I mean, having been a lifelong entrepreneur and built teams and companies over the years, and before my last kind of disastrous business, which was in senior healthcare, prior to that, I was a hotel developer. And prior to that, just internet, and you asked me what I'd done, internet and real estate services online, and before that, real estate services and brick and mortar, pretty much sums up most of what I've done. But you know, what led me to meditation in a group or just awareness and mindfulness and gratefulness with the people that I work with is that the traditional management structure, in my view, is very broken, just like the traditional interview structure is very broken. It's very difficult to put someone through a one or two interview from their resume and discern too much about them. Our interview process takes about 6 weeks. And finally culminates, if you make it this far, into a four-day in-person interview staying with us in Napa. So, and if you make it that far, and if you have a significant other, that person also comes with you. So we have a very, very extensive interview process and just a whole culture built around awareness and really community and love and family and self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others and patience and just a culture that really builds a lot of trust, intercommunal trust. So I think that's really, you know, what I found in my last business, which I had failed at so miserably, was just really the wrong people, the wrong place. And I think it's just, it's very difficult to find people who really want to engage in a deep relationship with the people that they work with. And that's what we want. That's what works best for us. And that's what drives a lot of success for us. So, you know, we started all of these practices as a result of my prior experiences, which I thought were not successful. Although I had been financially successful, I didn't think I was successful in building the kind of community I wanted to work in. Right. So then we just sort of experimenting with a lot of awareness practices and a lot of really, really transparent trust with each other that has led to, you know, a phenomenal success story and also a phenomenal community to live in.
Now, you sound like somebody who's worn quite a few hats in your lifetime through different businesses. What is the number one thing you learned as an entrepreneur that you would like to tell our current growing entrepreneur audience?
Well, I think the two things, two lessons that I walk away from, three maybe. One is living a life of gratitude instead of expectation. When we have a management style of expectation, in other words, we expect things to happen to benefit us, and we're living a life of expectation instead of appreciation. When we live a life of appreciation, that's when we find joy. It's very difficult, particularly as a young entrepreneur, to understand that because the business press will want you to believe that the more you strive, you know, the further you get. I believe just the opposite is true, and that we actually gain more by doing less, by slowing down and being more mindful. I don't believe in multitasking. I don't believe in striving. I believe in thriving. And we thrive in a community of love. We thrive in a community of trust. That's where we thrive. And so I think learning to thrive instead of strive is a really, really difficult lesson for entrepreneurs because typically they're type A, oftentimes bipolar, just really, really driven. And so it's difficult to slow down and be patient with yourself. And the third lesson is self-forgiveness, right? Just really, really having a deep understanding of yourself. This comes with age and with experience, but again, slowing down, thriving, not striving, and really just taking it easy on yourself. Because as entrepreneurs, I mean, it's a very lonely place. You know, it's the air is very thin at the top. And so you're leading a team and the team looks to you, you know, to have the answers and to be the anchor. Right. And so that's a lonely place. You can't, you know, I sort of got rid of all that in this company and that I live a very transparent and vulnerable life with the people that I work with. And they trust and appreciate that. We live in a world of understanding that we're all flawed, right? And that we're all going to make mistakes and that none of us are perfect. But if our heart is in the right place, the outcome will end up in the right place. I hope that was helpful.
Yeah, it was. You know, you remind us a lot, or you remind me a lot of our CEO, Eric Neuner. I think you guys would really get along very well because that is something that he really pushes and that we push in our own community is the importance of those relationships. So let's talk a little bit more about your turning point. So you've come from a healthcare background. What did you say, like a internet tech background? That's a little different than wine. What was your big turning point to making this big change into creating your own wine?
So the turning point for me was I had been pursuing a life of health, really around anti-aging and performance. And I had been biohacking, as it would be known. And for your audience who doesn't know what biohacking is, it's really how we influence our behavior to impact our neurological and biological outcomes. So it's to optimize the life experience neurologically and biologically. I've been biohacking for probably about 10 years, but 5 years ago, I got very serious about it and got deep into the world of biohacking. And really the person who's most famous for the term is Dave Asprey at Bulletproof. And we, as I pursued a healthier lifestyle, I mean, a much, much healthier lifestyle. In fact, I've been ketogenic for nearly 5 years. I do intermittent fasting. I'll eat once a day, cold thermogenesis, meditation, just this kind of long list of optimization techniques. But one of the things, after I became ketogenic and really deep into the keto world, I found I couldn't drink commercial wines anymore. I didn't know anything. I live in Napa Valley. I live in the heart of the most important wine appellation in North America. But I didn't really, and I had made wine before, but I really didn't understand what was going on in the wine business. And so let's switch to that for just a second about why wines are not healthy, or most wines are not healthy. What's happened in the wine supply is the same thing that's happened in our food supply. So we have massive corporate consolidation really around greed and money. And so what your audience doesn't know, I'm going to share a couple dirty, dark secrets in the wine industry. So 52% of all the wines manufactured in the United States are made by just three companies, three giant multi-billion dollar conglomerates. And these wines are made in massive factories in Central California. Now, the reason your audience doesn't know that and is because these very smart multi-billion dollar conglomerates hide behind thousands of brands and labels to have you believe that you're drinking from a farmhouse or a chateau. In fact, you're drinking from a factory. It's a little further than that in that the top 30 wine companies in the United States make over 70% of the wine sold. And so, again, your audience doesn't know about this and a couple of other nasty facts, like there are 76 additives approved by the FDA for the use in winemaking in the United States. Your audience doesn't know about the 76 additives because the wine industry has been very successful in keeping contents labeling off of wine bottles. So wine is the only major food product without a contents label on it. And the reason for that is because the industry has fought to keep contents label off of the bottle because they don't really want you to know what's in it. So what's really happening in the wine business, and when you go into the grocery store or even your local wine shop, all these wine bottles that you're seeing, most of them are made by just a handful of people, right? And they contain a whole bunch of nasty additives and chemicals in the process that are quite unhealthy for you and make you feel bad. And in fact, for most people, until they start drinking our wines or wines that are naturally made and they're only a handful in the world that are actually 100% naturally made, and I'll tell you what that means in a moment. But until they start drinking natural wines, they didn't really know how bad wine was making them feel because they thought that's just how you feel when you drink wine. But in fact, drinking natural, clean wines is a completely different experience. So what makes a natural wine natural is that it's organic or biodynamically farmed, and biodynamic farming is a prescriptive form of organic farming. It is then, in our case, dry farm, so it's no irrigation. There are no additives. It is, very importantly, the wine is fermented with wild native yeast that are indigenous to the vineyard where the grapes are grown. So all grapes have yeast on the skin. And these natural wines are fermented with that native yeast. Commercial wines are made with genetically modified commercial yeast that are made in a laboratory. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. The primary reason is that it's easier to work with, they're more stable and they're more robust, and they make for a less risky fermentation for the winemaker. And you also can't make wine in any appreciable quantity without using these modified commercial yeast, because native yeast are too fickle. They're too feeble to work in an environment where there's a tremendous amount of volume. So in addition to that, in bottling, there are no new oak programs, which lead to methanol influences in the wine. which are also unhealthy. It's a toxin. And our wines are also 12.5% or below in alcohol. So we only sell and drink low alcohol wine. So the combination of all these factors create a tremendously healthy drinking experience. And it's also the reason that, as you know, we're endorsed by virtually every known health leader in the United States and all of the famous health leaders online, like Dr. David Perlmutter and Dr. Mark Hyman, Dave Asprey of Bulletproof, Mark Sisson, Mars Daily Apple, JJ Virgin. The list is long, 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 long. There are the hundreds of doctors who endorse us, who've tried our product. Dominic D'Agostino, who's the leading ketogenic researcher in the country, endorses us. He's done ketogenic. We're known as the ketogenic wine company because everybody on my staff is ketogenic. We also speak and on the ketogenic circuit and are very active in that community. And so we're sort of, because our wines are sugar free, and I might add, we do lab testing on every single wine. So every single wine that we sell, which is about 500 different wines, has gone through an extensive lab testing independently by us using a certified enologist independent of us to do lab sampling on each wine. So anyway, the cumulative effect of all of these quantifications and restrictions and tests that we put the wine through results in an extraordinary, not only taste experience, but also an extraordinary, extraordinarily better feeling. So no remnant negative effects, no hangovers. The buzz quality is cleaner and lighter and fresher, and it just tastes better. It's also friendlier with food.
You know, I did see in the marketing that it was a hangover free, and you know, as a 20-something, that's like music to my ears. I love to hear that because I've noticed, like, since I've passed 25, anytime I've had wine, and clearly I'm not drinking the right wine, I've been having a hangover after like a glass and a half, two glasses, which used to never happen to me. So what is it exactly that makes your wine hangover free or reduced hangover?
Well, what's giving you a hangover, if you just talk about alcohol, it's alcohol, and more specifically dehydration. Is, you know, if you're just talking about ethyl alcohol, so if you're drinking spirits, but if you're drinking wine, it's a whole lot more complicated than that. It's both alcohol plus the additives, plus the styles of the wine, plus sugar. When you mix sugar and alcohol together, you get a pretty nasty outcome. And I'll use this example for the audience because they'll understand this. If you have a shot of tequila, that's a very different experience in terms of how you feel than if you drink a margarita, right? Which is teeming with sugar, right? So you'll get way more hangover from a margarita than you will from just straight tequila, which is pretty clean. I don't drink spirits because they're too high in alcohol. So what I'm trying to avoid is big doses of alcohol. Alcohol is toxic and dangerous. And so it's really important that we think about dosage, right? So, which is why I only drink and sell low alcohol wines, because I'm not interested. I love drinking wine. I'm not interested in the negative impact of big doses of alcohol. And so commercial wines are very high in alcohol. They're typically 14 to 16 or 16 and a half or 17% alcohol. Most of the wines I drink are 11%. That's a massive difference in dose. Most people also don't have a glass of wine. They have several, right? And so it really, this dosage level really matters. So alcohol is number one. But number two, these additives that are going into wine, and also the winemaking style. And for women, the primary problem with wine are what are known as biogenetic amines. And they're very high in commercial wine. And the two predominant amines are histamine and tyramine. And that's what gives most women their problem with typical red wines, because in the commercial winemaking process, and I won't get in, it's no reason to crawl down the wormhole about why this is true, but in the commercial winemaking process, histamines are exaggerated, as are other biogenetic amines are exaggerated from winemaking styles, primarily having to do with the maceration period or the extraction of color from the skins when you make red wine. So, which is the reason that women particularly, but men as well, will tell you that they can drink white wine and don't have too much problem, but red wine gives them a lot of problems. That's because of these amines, primarily histamine. We thought that sulfites, which are an additive, sulfur dioxide is an additive in wine, but because the wine bottle says contains sulfites, it's commonly thought, it's a myth, that sulfites are the driver of hangovers in wine. That's simply not true, and here's how I can tell you antithetically that it's not true, is because sulfites are much higher in white wines than they are red wines. And again, I think your experience is probably the same. Most people experience much greater hangovers from red wines than white wines. Has that been your experience?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right. So this kind of thing, when you drink red wine and you get this kind of blunted feeling on your head, I mean, like you've just been clubbed, that's additive. That is high levels of sulfur dioxide, which is an additive. Sulfites are naturally occurring in wine. Sulfur dioxide is added as a sterilizer and a preservative in commercial wines. And also these very high levels of tyramine and histamine. In addition to, as I began, higher alcohol creates more dehydration. That's what's causing you to wake up at, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, have to get up, get a glass of water. I mean, that's all from dehydration, or waking up in the morning and feeling like just terrible. Most of that feeling is from dehydration.
Not that I'm saying anybody should buy anything else but dry firm wines, but say you're walking through the grocery store, how are you able to identify wine that's not going to give you this hangover, you know, have all these additives? How can you identify the difference between an actually great organic wine versus someone that's maybe put organic on the label?
Well, organic is, I mean, so having an organic wine, if organic is stated on the label, it's certified organic. I mean, it's likely to be accurate that it is organically farmed.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than natural winemaking protocols in the cellar. So they're two different. There's two. One half is farming. The other half is winemaking practices, right? So you can go to old Whole Foods and you'll find any number of organic wines grown with organic grapes. That does not mean that they're clean. Does not mean they're sugar-free. It does not mean that they are clean of additives by any stretch of the imagination. It just means that they were grown with organic fruit. So there's a huge, huge difference. But to answer your question, in the grocery store, you know, you're not likely to find any natural wines. We're the largest buyer and seller of natural wines in the world. Most natural wines are made in Europe. There's a handful of domestic producers, but none of them meet our health quantifications. So all of our wines come from Europe, from small family farms. There's only about 500 winemakers in the world out of a couple hundred thousand labels and winemakers. There's only about a little less than 500 that meet our criteria for health and natural winemaking practices, and they're primarily all in Europe. But if you're in the grocery store, I don't suggest you buy wine in the grocery store, but if you were to do such a thing, even in a wine shop, it's a dicey. There's natural wines are just such a finite part of the overall wine category that they're very hard to find. If you're in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, even Dallas, you can find one or two retailers that might dabble in natural wine. There's not going to be a grocery store. It would be like a bottle shop. There is a very popular app that you can download on your phone to find natural wine resources. It's called Raisin, and it's the only kind of resource for natural wines worldwide. So anytime I'm in a city and I want to find a natural wine on a restaurant list or a bottle shop that sells natural wines, if it exists in that city, it's likely to be on Raisin. So, but if you're in a restaurant that has a pretty extensive wine list, particularly if you're in a hip restaurant, you know, farm to table or something kind of hip, you might ask the wine buyer or the somm or, you know, who to make a recommendation for. You could ask them for, do they have any natural wines? They may or may not know what that is, depending upon the restaurant. And then more specifically, do they have any low alcohol natural wines? Now, if that fails and you're in your grocery store, this is the advice I would give you. Buy foreign wines. Typically, I look for wines from France because it's just the place where there's the most amount of natural wines being produced. The number one region I would look for is the Loire Valley. That's going to be kind of the headquarters of natural wine in France. Again, you'd have to be in a wine shop to find Loire, or Jura is another appellation that's quite famous for natural wines in France. You'd have to be in a bottle shop. In your grocery store, I would just look for, you know, I would just look for imported wines, you know, just something that looked like it was smaller production. You can look at a label oftentimes and get the feel of, hey, this feels kind of corporate. This feels a little bit sort of fancy, or, you know, this feels like it's a little smaller production. But definitely European wines. I don't buy domestic wines.
What would you recommend to somebody who doesn't really drink wine but is inspired by this podcast to go ahead and start drinking?
Easing into wine. I don't know. I've been drinking wine since I was in my teens, so a long, long time. I think it's, again, if they want to ease into wine, they need to ease into a healthier wine, right? They obviously can get that from us, but I'm not here to try to sell wine to your audience. They can get it from us. Other than us, I would say that they look for a couple of different grapes out of Europe, because these grapes are tend to have winemaking styles that are just more subtle, and so Pinot Noir from France, Pinot du Nord from France, Gamay, which is the red grape of Beaujolais, and don't be confused by the Nouveau Beaujolais, but I'm talking about classic Beaujolais. Gamay is probably, in my view, the best way to sort of get introduced. And these are all red wines. White wines, you know, all white wines are going to be pretty approachable. And so rosés, white wines, going to be very approachable. Red wines are where the kind of heavier lifting comes in. And so I would just recommend, if they're going to ease in, that they start with a medium to lighter style grape and winemaking practice. And Gamay is probably my favorite all around. Like, if I had to go to the tool chest and pull out, you know, my favorite screwdriver, if I pulled my favorite grape out, it's just going to be Gamay. It's just, which is the grape of Beaujolais. And Gamay is just sort of a medium range, dependable, you know, just always faithful kind of grape that just always tastes good and is kind of middle of the road. Personally, I drink Pinot du Nord and Trousseau and Plussard. These are all grapes that your audience has never heard of, but they're super pale, very, very light, very low alcohol. I love low alcohol wines because I love to drink wine. So it's not unusual for me to drink a bottle or a bottle and a half every night. And you couldn't do that with a traditionally produced commercial wine. You would feel like, you know, you feel terrible, plus you get drunk.
Yes. I don't think I could live that lifestyle. Well, you know, so we see a lot of studies that point to wine being healthy, that it can, like, I don't know, I've seen one on BuzzFeed where it was like, it can take the place of like 30 minutes at the gym, a bottle of wine can. I don't know if that's exactly what they said, but it was something crazy like that. Or it can cure heart disease. There's lots of reports telling us, you know, the exact opposite. And at HCI, we're about to go into a cleanse, and I'm going to really need some arguing points so I can have a glass or two of wine. What are the benefits of drinking natural wine?
Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch of benefits to drinking natural wines versus commercial wines, but let me address your first kind of question about, you know, is wine
healthy? BuzzFeed articles.
Was that?
The BuzzFeed article version of...
Well, the BuzzFeed article, I've seen it. It's all over social media. We love to see it from a business point of view, but I just think it's kind of silly. I think it's just some kind of... It's just to get people to open articles. Of course, we want to believe that. I don't believe that. Again, alcohol is toxic and dangerous. And how we use it, we need to be very careful and thoughtful about that. But if we are going to drink, we want to drink lower alcohol products, and we want to drink natural products, right? So organic farming produces higher antioxidants and higher polyphenols in the grape. So here's the deal. Red wine is healthier than white wine. And the reason being is because it contains just over 800 polyphenols, which come primarily from the juice contact with the skin and the seeds. This is how red wine gets its color. So if you squeeze juice from a red wine grape and juice from a white wine grape, they're both clear. How red wine gets its color is that once the juice is pressed, then it's put into a tank and the skins from which the juice was pressed, which include the seeds, are dumped into the tank and the juice macerates or has contact with the skin for a number of days or weeks, depending upon the winemaking style. And that contact with the skin is where most of the polyphenols, which are the healthy aspects of wine, the most famous one is known as resveratrol. And resveratrol has gotten a lot of fame for anti-aging, but again, it's a little bit misleading. It's a little red herring that the wine industry has promoted. It is true that resveratrol is contained in red wine. The problem is that based on the lab studies, there's been no human studies, but based on the lab studies that have subjected mice to resveratrol and shown some longevity benefits, the problem is you'd have to drink a swimming pool of red wine a week to get this dose of resveratrol from it.
Oh,
but
wow.
Here's what we do know. What we do know is that these polyphenols that are also found in chocolate and other natural products, that not milk chocolate, I'm talking about 100% cocoa. There are fermented foods. There are many places where we can find these polyphenols that are beneficial to both our cardiovascular and our neurological system. The red wine is very high and very dense in these antioxidant polyphenols. And so that's where most of the benefit, but again, if we're overdosing, we're kind of wiping out the benefit of the polyphenols with the destructive nature of toxic levels of alcohol. So it's really important. And I love drinking. I drink every day and have been drinking every day for most of my life. It's just, we have to really be careful about how we're dosing if we want to have a healthy, particularly a healthy brain impact from drinking.
Hey, Better Than Ever podcasters, Hannah Duncan here, interrupting this interview to let you know about an exciting challenge we have going on in the HCI community. Here is Success Coach Alice Moore with the deets.
The HCI Spring Cleanse is a community cleanse being led by myself, Alice Moore, and Coach Joe Johnson. And we're leading all of the HCI community through this cleanse. It's an opportunity to experience the 14-day cleanse for yourself. And while doing that, also learn to facilitate the cleanse for your clients. This cleanse is for all the students of the HCI community and for the HCI staff.
I'm trying to save up for my Cancun vacation. How much does this cleanse cost?
The cleanse is free. It's a bonus as part of your program to join us.
Heyo, you had me at free. So when does this baby start?
Monday, May 7th, we have a welcome party for the cleanse. Thursday, May 10th is our first kickoff meeting. We'll have 5 consecutive sessions with Alice and Joe, answering your questions and participating in the cleanse.
Not gonna lie, this seems a little too good to be true. Why is it important for HCI to give away this cleanse?
It's important for us to learn about a cleanse and experience it for ourselves as health coaches so that we're able to empathize and understand when we're leading people through a cleanse. It's also important to be a part of this amazing tribe and community to see how we can keep up-leveling our own health. As we up-level our own health, we can inspire others to up-level theirs.
HCI Tribe, make sure to join Alice, Joe, and Sam for the HCI Spring Cleanse. I'll be doing it to prep for my Cancun trip at the end of May, so cheer me on as well as the rest of our tribe. Now let's bring back our special guest this week, Todd White, founder of Dry Farm Wines.
What really drove your passion into making this a career?
Well, it just, I think it really spoke to, you know, spoke to one of my passions for sure. I've been drinking wine and been a lifelong wine fan. I just didn't really know what was going on in wine and what's happened to wine over the last 50 years or so. And so, but I, you know, I was super passionate about it. So it was really something that I was, after the, let me just turn the clock back for 1 second. After the failure of my last business, which was pretty dramatic and it's just ugly. And I mean, I had a gentle wind down, but I lost a lot of money. It's just, it was just not a good, just not a good thing. And after that, I made a set of business rules. There are 18 business rules that I made that would dictate. I mean, I'm not employable. I've been self-employed since I was 17. So I was going to be self-employed again, but I made this list of 18 business rules. Among them, among the 18 rules, was being in a business that I love so much, I'd be glad to do it for free. And I'm in such a business today, right? So I just love what I do. I love taste. I love the craft of taste. And I've always enjoyed food and taste and wine. And so I'm just super passionate about living, you know, living my taste. And so I would literally do what I do for free, happily to do it for free. And so that was one of my 18 rules. So that's, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just a no-brainer for me. I mean, I get up every day. I don't drink wine during the daytime. I only drink at night. I don't recommend others drink during the daytime either. But, you know, I get up every day and I get to experience my life with people I love, with tens of thousands of customers that I love, and with a product that I love and travel that I love finding that product. As you know, I just flew in from Italy last night. We were talking about before we started the show. I was in Italy for 3 weeks buying wine, and I leave again in 10 days to go to Vienna and to Berlin and finally to Paris, where we have an office. And so it's, you know, so it's just really, it's hard to complain about my life. It's just really, really good.
Well, it sounds like you've set yourself up well too. You've created a business that you love on a product that you care about. And then I love what you were saying too about, you know, the interviewing process to find your team members. You're not just going on Craigslist and pulling off the first person that says, you know, I can do this. You are really getting to know them as a person, including their family and spouse. So you've set yourself up with a solid community, and you are building a product that you can tell you're very passionate about it. And that's, you know, as entrepreneurs, that's all we want for our clients, all we want for our students to have is that very experience.
Yeah, so it just really matters that the people you surround yourself with are the single most important factor in your life. You know, the five people you spend the most amount of time with are going to have the most significant impact on your life. That if there's one piece of advice to young entrepreneurs, that would probably be it. The people you surround yourself with are going to have more impact on your life than virtually any other thing. And that's going to include relationships you're in at home or at work or with your friends. You know, I want to be around people who inspire me to be a better version of me.
Yeah, no, I love that advice. Well, Todd, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. And, you know, you've given us so many great tidbits. And as we do have a lot of young entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast, is there anything that you could give them advice in as far as how are you able to sort of turn around and pick everything up and essentially start over? Because I think that's a big part of the entrepreneur life. Somebody who wants to start a business, not everyone is going to be successful. So how do you kind of reframe that and turn that into something you've learned from?
Well, I'd love to be able to put that into a prescription, but unfortunately it's something I think most people have to experience. I get asked this question a lot. I think the number one piece of advice is you really have to practice a lot of self-forgiveness. You know, we're all flawed and we're going to err, And sometimes those eras are, you know, going to be quite dramatic and have quite negative impacts. What typically happens with an entrepreneur, because most entrepreneurs live in a world of not believing that they're enough. That's part of what drives them, is to sort of prove that they can be as good as that they think that they are, or, you know, that kind of driver. And when they fall, they oftentimes fall hard, and they, you know, internalize that. And they, you know, they, in my case, it was a lot of shame and grief. And like, I just couldn't believe, like, how did I let this happen to myself after, you know, being so successful? And, you know, how could I, you know, how did this possibly happen? And it's like, it was a lot of self-blame. And so from what I learned from that was, you know, really, you know, how to process failure, right? Unfortunately, success is a very poor teacher, right? So success is one of the worst things that can happen for a business. And we remind ourselves of that all the time here. Success is a very dangerous emotion, right? Failure, on the other hand, is a great and wise teacher, right? So until we fail, until we get down to a point of really examining who we are and what we believe in, we're not going to really find our path to joy. We're not going to really find our path to freedom, you know, until we get to a place where we can have a serious examination of who we are and what our values are. And failure helps you get there, right? So I think, for me, the recovery was really, it's when I adapted a meditation practice, was from that failure. I had tried to meditate before, but like most people, I stopped quickly because I was failing at it. Or what people consider failure at meditation is because they say they can't stop thinking. And that's the reason meditation is called a practice, because we don't start meditating day one and stop thinking. We, in fact, never stop thinking. During meditation, we just find periods of silence. And so I think self-forgiveness and meditation are probably the two best ways to move past these kind of failures. But failure is generally the most important thing, I think, that can happen to you. Success, again, is a very, very, very poor teacher.
I love that quote. Success is a poor teacher. Failure is great and a wise teacher. Well, thank you again for joining us today. And if you had one part of your business or your life that is your very favorite thing, what is that?
The people I work with. So I work with, there's just 15 of us running a $30 million business. And The single greatest thing about my life is the people that I come to work with every day. And it's an extraordinary, extraordinary group of people. Every single one is a rock star. I've had thousands of employees over my career. I have never had a company where every single person I worked with was a rock star. You know, there was always someone who was a liability. Always someone who probably needed to be terminated, always someone who was causing some kind of drama, right? And so for the first time, and these 15 people were accumulated through a very meticulous process of elimination, you know, every single one is just a tremendous rock star and brings so much to my life every single day, whether I'm here or traveling or, you know, they're just amazing people with great hearts and so much unconditional love and so much contribution to me and to each other. So that's the number one thing that I think is the biggest impact on my life.
Surround yourself with the right people. I love too that you had a quote earlier about the five people you surround yourself with are the people that are going to have the biggest effect on your life. So thank you again for joining us. Where can you go to learn a little bit more about Dry Farm Wines?
Well, I'm happy to tell you we have a special offer for your guests today. They can go to dryfarmwines.com/better-than-ever. Again, that's dryfarmwines.com/better-than-ever and get a penny bottle of wine from us. That's the best way to experience our wine. And in that order, they will have an opportunity to taste a number of wines and get a penny bottle in the process. So it's a great way to get introduced to our wines. Again, we're the only health quantified wine merchant in the world, so you can't really get our wines anywhere else other than from us. So that's the best way to do it. In addition to that, they can see all that they need to see about our company and our ethos and all of our quantifications and farming practices and all of the things that much greater detail than I went into today just by going to dryfarmwines.com. And we're Dry Farm Wines on all social media. So that's the best way to find out about us.
That makes it easy enough. Well, thank you again. And thank you for supporting us at our live events. We have loved giving your product to our social media winners and I look forward to actually trying it. So thank you again, Todd, for sharing your story. And, we hope to have you back soon. And, you know, if you are needing that assistant, I would be happy to send my application or whatever you need.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I am going to send you a box of wine. So that's the good news. So the box of wine will go out for you today and you're going to like say, oh, wow, it's correct. This is real.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And we will see you guys next week.
With a free case of wine, a potential side job, and a free cleanse, I am set up for success for my upcoming vacation. Can't wait to catch up with you guys on the next podcast where we will be featuring 10K in 10 Weeks finalist Sarah Basoki on the podcast. Have a great week.
Thanks for tuning in to Better Than Ever, a Health Coach Institute podcast. For more information on our programs, please go to www.healthcoachinstitute.com. Comment and share if you like what you hear.